episode 6.
Hey everyone, this is Sherman here, and you're listening to Into the 99, where we have 99 cards, because Commander's number one. We have here with us...
We have Hope.
And Daniel.
Woohoo!
The gang's all here.
Gang's all here! And today we are talking about something that is close to my heart. I know I play a lot of jank, but I do have some decks that are really, really strong, or at least I think it's really strong. But we're going to go over one of the deck techs that I have for one of my decks. This one is, in my opinion, one of my more complicated ones. I let people play this deck a few times. I've explained a few of the concepts, and it's still really, really difficult for them to play, and there's a lot of reasons why. And we're going to go over it. So,
why don't we dive on into it?
Yeah.
So who are the commanders?
So our commanders are, one, Regna the Redeemer, and Krav the Unredeemed. Redeemer, Unredeemed. But they are partner commanders from Battle Bond. So, Hope, do you want to read out and say what they are?
Yeah, so what Regna does, she is a 6-cost, 5-colorless, 1-white, flying angel. At the beginning of each end step, if your team gain life this turn, create 2 1/1 white warrior creature tokens. And Krav is 4-colorless, 1-black. He is, for 1 black mana, sacrifice X creatures, target player draws X cards and gains X life. Put X 1/1 counters on Krav.
The Unredeemed.
Yeah, they're great partners. They work very well with each other. Krav, you can sacrifice himself to himself. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really, really fun. So with this, the deck, basically, the way I have it is that this deck tries to use as many resources as possible, okay? It'll use, it has a lot of card draw, so it'll use your library as a resource. It'll use your life as a resource. You'll be gaining life like crazy. You'll use your board state as a resource. You'll use your opponent's board state as a resource. You'll use your graveyard as a resource. Everything you can, you will use as a resource.
The more you use every part of the meat in this deck.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, some of it's like 1 or 2 cards and everything, yes, but it still tries to use a lot of things from different areas as resources. So I like to call this the stock market deck, because whatever your opponents can't deal with, you put
that's
all your
you
resources
can, yeah,
in.
Yeah, that's what you can focus on for that game. So it gives you a lot of win cons and a lot of options for how you can take on any other opponent.
Yeah. So you can like drain life from people. You can use your creatures and swing wide. If the opponent kills your creatures, you can sacrifice them for life or card draw. If the creatures are in the graveyard and they're making you remove your graveyard, they're going to get hurt from that. There's so many things in this deck. And like I said, it's one of the most complicated decks I've ever made. And this deck was designed to try and win the battle of attrition. Okay, so basically attrition is... when you think of it like a battle, or like with 2 armies, all right? If one side wins, okay, fine. They still lose a bunch of soldiers or whatnot, or a bunch of resources, all right? And that's what attrition is, okay? It's just losing out on that. So if you have like a huge board state, if someone uses a board wipe and takes out all your stuff, they're winning the battle of attrition because they use 1 card to get rid of like 10 things. This deck does the opposite. If you have a huge board state and they use a board wipe, you can sacrifice all that stuff to gain life, get cards, stuff, everything else. And it's basically a 1-for-1 at that point in time.
Yeah,
you don't care.
They win the turn, but you can continue to win the game.
Yeah. So, and then they wasted that and you already know they can't deal with it. So you rebuild quickly because you have that card draw.
Well, no one would play a board wipe that was 4 mana, destroy all creatures, and make your opponent draw 10 cards.
Exactly. Yeah. And knowing that you can still do the draw, they do still decide to do the board wipe. It kind of puts them in a state of... They're kind of laying out their hand to you and showing you that they're a little bit nervous and a little bit desperate.
Yeah. So this deck just doesn't care. It really doesn't. And because of that, and we'll cover this later on for weaknesses, is this deck tends to make it so it's like arch enemy. So if you're not prepared to play arch enemy, don't play this deck at all. So, but it really, like, I play this when I really want to try out new concepts. I want to feel the pressure from three players trying to go after me, because I find that when you're in a tight spot, that's when you pull a bunch of stuff out of nowhere and you figure out new combos or you figure out new interactions, look up rules, and you become a better player. When the pressure is on, you do whatever you can to survive.
Yeah, so you're playing your deck in ways that you might not have ever expected to play your deck. You know, cards that you never would have played together because you have to, and you have to find a way to get out of the tight spot.
Yeah. It's fun like that, because then you are forced to look at different scenarios you may not have considered when you're putting your deck together. And you're really, at the end of that, just learning what your deck does and doesn't do. Mm-hmm. And that's how you build it and change it. But
yeah.
When you have a different answer for different scenarios, it is really, really fun. That's one of the things I enjoy the most, is me playing something that I think is great and having someone counter it in an interesting way, or someone be able to, like you were saying, sack all your creatures to draw some mana, or mm-hmm. gain life, gain
card draw, and put in a bunch of counters. It's
interesting to see how certain people can turn disadvantage
into an advantage.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like, I'll have it where, like, you know, I sack everything to Crab, and then Crab is like a 12-12, and I drew, like, you know, like 11 cards, gain 11 life, and then I'll sort of plowshares my Crab just to gain more life, and everyone's just like, this is stupid. Oh, wait, Sanguine Bond's out. Son of a bitch. So, but it's just things like that, mm-hmm. right? So this deck, like, we'll throw up the deck or the deck list later and everything. I actually had to try to think of what cards went into it before, because when I originally created it, it was pretty strong, and then I had to tone it down a lot. So that's where I had a bunch of counter spells and stuff like Withering Boon for the black, where it's like one in a black, pay 3 life, and you counter target summoning spell. You know, it was just dumb cards like that that I put into lower, or like I had Butch of Mana Cure in there.
Oof.
Because originally, I had Dictate of Erebos. Dictate of Erebos does the same thing. It's just an enchantment, and it costs 5 mana instead of 7 mana.
With flash.
So Dictate was way stronger than mm-hmm. Butcher. But to lower the power level, I put Butcher in instead. Yeah. But
it's a Butcher of Malakir is just as annoying, but it's a lot easier to deal with a creature.
Yeah. So, and that's why I put that in there like in exchange for that. But with this one, I put back the Dictated Error Rules. I took out the Butcher Manager just so people can see what the deck was designed for originally.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I threw in some of the new cards too, because mm-hmm. heck, we all love new cards. So here are some of the stats for the deck. Okay, first off, there's 18 creatures. Not many creatures. Okay, you don't care because you have a lot of card draw.
Mm-hmm.
And you're generating tokens. And
you're generating creatures with your life gain.
Yeah, so you don't care. There's 11 mana ramp cards. I know that is a lot, and I will explain why later, but this deck is close to around like 50% mana.
Well, let's go through what the creatures are first. What are the creatures that you have in the deck?
Good question. So some of the creatures we have are Soul Wardens and Soul Attendant, Soul Sisters. Okay, so whenever a creature comes into play, every time a creature comes into play, you gain a life. It doesn't matter if it's you or an opponent. There's Mother of Rune, where you can tap it and you give a creature protection from a color. Blood Artist, Zillaport Cutthroat, and there was another one, what's it called? The one from Ravnica or whatever, but it's like basically
the Cruel Celebrant.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
but it
whenever a creature enters or Planeswalker enters, that's a good one too.
Yeah, so like these ones are like when they die, it's like you drain an opponent or drain all the opponents and you gain a life. You have White Mane Lion, where it has flash. You just for one in a white, you flash it out. It's 2/1 or something like that. I don't care. What I care about is that when it enters the battlefield, you target a creature and that you control. and return it to your hand. So
this deck has a lot of built-in advantage in the creatures.
Yeah.
In the when things die, it's good for you. When things come into play, it's good for you. And it has a lot of protection for any of the ones that you feel are vital to keep alive at the time.
Yeah.
Like you said, depending on the games.
Exactly. So there's all sorts of things, like Corpse Knights and everything that drains people. Pious Evangel will gain life as creatures come into play. Campbell Consoles of Allocation will drain people. Like, it goes on and on and on. But everything has a reason behind it, and everything else kind of synergizes with something else. So, like, if you go back with the Soul Warden and Soul Attendant, okay, both of those will gain life every time a creature comes into play. Well, if I had Regna out, okay, and someone's playing creatures on their turn, I'm gaining life, and then during the end step, I'm creating two more 1/1 warrior tokens, and then I'm gaining life from that as well. So I'm gaining 3 life if my opponent casts 1 creature.
Mm-hmm.
If each person casts 1 creature, I've gained a total of 9 life by the time it comes back to me. If I have 2 creatures that gain me life every time something comes out, I'm doubling that. I'm gaining 18. This gets really, really crazy really fast.
You're almost increasing your life by 25 to 50% every single round, every single turn.
Yeah.
By just doing nothing.
Yeah.
Just by showing up.
Yep. You just sit back and just be like...
And just keep rolling your life counter up.
Yeah. And this is one of the reasons why it becomes arch enemy very, very mm-hmm. quickly. Like, I don't have the Aether Flux in here just because it's just not as fun. Like, I'll nuke you. It's just not cool.
Everybody dies.
Yeah. But this makes it harder. Yeah. And then with things like the Zulaport or the Blood Artist, like, you kill my stuff, I'm still gaining life, I'm still draining you, it still makes it difficult. And I'll let you guys hit me as much as you want, as long as not the commander, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I have so much life, it makes no difference.
So that's it. It puts you in a different position, because you have to look at how you can deal with that player without just trying to do traditional damage, because that's probably not going to get you there.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to deal with a lot of things, because most games are won because, like you said, traditionally people win with creatures.
Mm-hmm.
They attack you, they roll your life total, etc., etc. This kind of creates a buffer for you, so you can get your stronger spells out, your combos out, everything, okay? Because normally, like I said, one card works at least with at least 3 or 4 other cards. So when you have one card out, it will work with another one, and that one will work with like another 3 or 4 other cards. So it just literally just combos off of each other, almost mm-hmm. in a circle. So, and it makes it very, very difficult. So that's with the creatures. That's with mana ramp cards. I have 7 card draw spells. Mm-hmm. One of them is the commander himself, Krav.
So you always have access to it?
Yeah, I always have access to it. It'll get expensive eventually, because a lot of people will target Krav. Yay. But you kind of get used to that. And that's another reason why I have a lot of mana ramp in here. Having things like Lightning Grease, Swiftfoot Boots, all that stuff is very, very pointless in this deck. I've tried it, and it's basically useless, okay? Because mm-hmm. people are just going to board wipe like crazy, and you just don't care. You give it haste, who cares about haste, okay? It's activated ability, you don't need to worry about having haste. You just tap a black and sacrifice stuff and go to town. It makes no difference. There are 6 board wipes in this deck. It is a lot. And that's because this deck controls the board.
Mm-hmm.
It does not care that you lose creatures, because all your other creatures do the same thing.
Well, I was going to say, you can rebuild your board state so easily that board wiping isn't really a huge concern.
Yeah, so it's like you board wipe, you bring out Regna, you know, and you cast like something that gives you life, like a Pristine Talisman with one of the mana ramp cards. Just tap it, gain a life, you let the mana go away, but you still gain that life, and you're getting 2 more 1/1s.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares on whose turn you do it for? You know, it creates blockers and everything. You're gaining life.
It creates fodder for Krav.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And you have 5 target removal spells.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, Return to Dust, you know, Source of Plowshares, things like that. Excuse me. Ooh. So, but let's go on with it. So those are the stats for this. So it seems really, really wacky, but this deck requires a lot of mana. And so, like, let's just go on to the strengths of this deck first. Okay, mm-hmm. So strength, number one, quick life gain. There's so much life gain in this deck. I think, like, close to half the spells have some sort of life gain in it. Okay, so like I said before, the Soul Sisters, you have things that drain, there's Bonsu's Monument, so whenever you're casting stuff, you're draining people as well. Oketra's Monument, where you're creating creatures, where you're gaining life from those creatures. When you have a white main line in your hand, it gets even crazier, because with Oketra's Monument, you're casting it for one white instead of two mana, so you're just flashing it in, targeting itself, bringing it back, creating a 1/1 warrior with vigilance, and just going nuts like that.
And then gaining two life every time.
Every single time.
Yeah. Same thing with Bonsu's Monument, so I don't get the reduction in the casting cost, but even if I cast it for two, I'm draining everyone for one life, and I'm gaining one life.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't care. And if I have a Soul Warrior, a Soul Attendant or something like that, or a Pious Evangel, I'm still gaining life as well.
Yeah.
So it's life gain after life gain after life gain. And
which
I'm
I think we've already sort of touched on, you know. So the life gain is really aggressive in this deck.
But that's what you want, especially
yeah,
like
it puts you...
everything goes well with it. And there's so many cards that do so well with life gain, just even that aren't even in the deck. As you said, Aetherflux earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to put that in this deck list and nuke someone outright.
Yeah, and it's any card like that would use life as a power source.
Yeah.
Which is something that is often a little bit scary. You don't want to use your life. But
speaking of strengths, just so many black cards, as we've talked before, are powerful because they utilize your life. And the downside is you're at least losing life for their effect.
But when you combo it with a white...
the gaining life, then all of a sudden an Underworld Connections isn't a problem.
Yeah.
You're getting your card draw off. Using the Talisman for the colored mana isn't a problem because you're going to gain that life back. So you're getting such an advantage by not having to worry about 5 points of damage, 6 points of damage.
There are no longer the same repercussions that you should in theory, be experiencing from playing all of these powerful black cards.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I didn't put in the Aetherflux.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because...
it's almost too easy.
It's too easy to win with that. Because like you'll be up in the hundreds with this deck at times. If no one checks you,
mm-hmm.
no one like tries to bring you down constantly, you get into the hundreds really
quickly.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
It's really, really stupid.
Well, and at the end of the day, everyone wants to have fun. Anyone can look at this deck list, they can decide that they want to put it in and just have the nuclear option on the board.
Yeah.
Then all you have to worry about is a Croson grip. But if that's not what you want to do, and you want to go into a more fun, what can I do and how can I answer problems?
Yeah.
Then this might be the deck style for you.
Yeah, I don't even have anything that uses Phyrexian mana in this deck, just because once again, it's just too cheap, in a sense, you know, because like you gain so much life, it's just you can go so crazy that it's just not fun for anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't want this to be a competitive deck.
Yeah,
I
could see a lot of potential in making this competitive, but at the end of the day, too, it's like you're going out, you're having fun, you wanted to play within your meta as well.
Yeah.
Well, that is the nice thing about a lot of decks like this, is you have the ability to tune it up if you want
mm-hmm.
and be that powerful, oppressive player. But as you said, when your life total is sitting at 400 or 500, it is pretty hard to not become the only target at the table.
Yeah.
The arch enemy, and then people are trying to go with commander damage and everything. And that's, like
mm-hmm.
I said, that's why...
commander damage, infects.
Yeah. You name it, like people try to do whatever they can, and it's fun seeing them work out stuff and become a team and try to be like, okay, if I like people when they politic now, when you see it, it's like literally I cast this and you cast this and I cast this. It's like you're facing down everyone when there's like telepathy on the board and everyone's showing their hands to each other.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, we need to sequence it like this. You do this, and you do this, and you do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they have to go against you, because they have no choice.
Yeah.
It's really, really stupid. But it makes for a fun interaction for everyone else. And like I said, I'm okay with that, because it pushes me to be better,
mm-hmm.
because I'm trying to find ways to get around them. I'm trying to find answers for everything. Like, I have to try to survive their 12th attack this freaking turn somehow. Yeah. Cause, you know,
with
whatever.
Flying.
Yeah.
It makes it so that you really have to focus on how to play the game. And you really have to, you have to stop thinking about you're playing against individuals. You're now playing against a 3-man team.
Yeah.
And you need to be a little bit more aggressive, be a little bit more strategic instead of just kind of coasting through the game, seeing it out, playing it out. Every turn needs to be meaningful.
Yeah.
At that point.
Everything in this, every time I play this deck, you have to be very, very mean. There has to be a meaning behind something.
Yeah.
So people are afraid.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like one of the things I'll do sometimes in extreme emergencies. I don't like doing this too often, but I will do it in extreme emergencies when it's like arch enemy. It's like I'll play a land because like I have a lot of land in this deck. I'll play a land and then I'm flipping through my cards. I'll cast one or two spells and then I'll be like, did I play a land for turn or not? And I know the answer is, yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is counting mana and they're like, yeah, you did. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I don't have a land in my hand. So now if I have two cards, they were like, okay, one of them's got to be a land.
What's the other one?
Yeah, what's the other one? But secretly, I actually have two spells.
Two answers.
I have two answers. So I'll cast one answer, and they're like, haha, we made them use up that one answer. Let's go to town.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, here's my second answer. And they're like,
bam.
Okay, we just wasted a bunch of resources,
mm-hmm.
and he had the answers. Now it's going to come to his turn. He's still alive. We need to try to come like build up our resources again.
Yeah.
So it's a little underhanded,
but
it's part of the
game.
It's
part of the game. Yeah.
It is part of the game.
Mind games and that sort of stuff and bluffing are just as much as a part of the game as playing your cards.
Yeah. So and that's one of the strengths here is the quick life gain. So we're just going through and just buffering that so we can take a bunch of hits.
Yeah.
The second thing is finding ways to use everything as a resource, just like I mentioned before. So cards that use up the life, cards that use graveyard, cards that draw from the library, cards that use up excessive creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge list.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But I feel like we've kind of touched on a lot of that, you know,
yeah.
like getting the draw so you can play the cards that gain you the life and then being able to play them back in the graveyard and using your creatures as fodder for crab and like
draw is such a good advantage over everything
one,
and having
yeah.
it built into a commander
is insane.
It's
yeah.
insane. And like I'll say this to every single person every single time when I play commander and they'll agree with me because they hear me say it, but some of them don't, but whatever. And that's card draw is king in commander.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
You have 100 cards. You need to get as many of them as you can. You
yeah.
put them all in that deck for a reason.
People are like, tutors are king. No. Tutors are not
draw.
King. Draw is king. Because tutors are either like sorcery speed, if to put them in your hand, instant speed to put them on top of your library.
But you're only getting one card.
Yeah, you're only getting one card.
You're only getting the one card, but you're also only getting it if you draw the tutor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you still have... Anyone who has draw advantage on you has a higher percent chance to get their answer in their win condition over you who is only drawing one card a turn. So you can have 5 or 6 tutors, but the chance of you hitting them compared to someone who's going to draw 5 cards
exactly.
a turn is very, very low. You're going to lose
that
most times.
Not only is there only a 5% chance of drawing one of those tutors, like out of that 100 cards, but exactly like you said, you're only doing one at a time. So it's just, it puts you in at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Like, draw is number one.
Draw
anytime
is
somebody is like, I don't need draw on my deck. I'm like, yes, you do.
See, and that's the thing. Like, anytime someone says, I don't need this or I don't need that, I'm like, okay, here is a challenge for you.
Let's consider this.
Yeah, let's get you to make a janky deck. Because when you make a janky deck, you learn very, very, very quickly what you need. And that is mana ramp, card draw. Those are the top two things you will always need.
Yeah.
So, and like I have one buddy, he was trying to build a deck around like nothing but beards. All art has have beards. And he's like, I can't find any mana ramp cards because no one has beards. And I'm like, well, what about Victory Chimes from Battlebond? Because there's a huge crowd
Somebody's got
to have
someone's
a beer.
Got to
have a beer. And he's like, no, no, no. Like, I'm going to have the same rule as you do where you actually have to see that someone has a beard. I cannot assume. I'm like, okay, fine. So he literally has no Manorant cards in his beard deck.
Bet that's a slow deck.
It is very, very, very slow. And you learn these things that when you're building a jank deck, that you need card draw, you need Manorant. But out of all of them, card draw is king. Because if you don't have the Manorant, but you have the card draw, you can draw into your lands.
Into your mana, exactly.
Yeah.
Hope learned the deck or the game the hard way. Mm-hmm. Her first deck that she focused anything into and on was the Ur Dragon. Trying to cast dragons and then editing it up with more and more dragons. She was sitting down at the table drawing cards constantly that were six to seven drops every turn.
Plus.
Yeah.
It made me, I feel like I learned the game real fast. It was sink or swim. But it made me a much better player at a very rapid rate. So,
Dragon to Boros Angels.
But like that's one of the fantastic things when you go full force into mm-hmm. learning something, right? You learn very, very quickly what works and what doesn't work, right?
Exactly.
So with that, the next thing, because of art card draw and everything, we already mentioned this earlier, is that you control the board very easily. Like, let's face it, you have 6 board wipes, 5 targeted removals. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are just the spells.
Yeah, you decide who plays what.
Yeah. Okay. It's almost like a blue control deck in that sense, but I don't have the counter spells. I just get rid of it. I don't care.
But like you said, you're not caring about your creatures living or dying.
Yeah.
So blowing that board wipe suddenly isn't a problem. It's not like an elf deck that has a Priest of Titania on board, mm-hmm. and you have to weigh, I really need this, but can I get rid of it? You don't care if your creatures die. They've already served their purpose. If it's to your advantage, are going to blow the table up and you'll rebuild.
Yep. You don't have the same, because that's exactly it. Typically, when you do a board wipe, it is at the expense of your own creatures as well, unless for some reason they're indestructible or what have you, or you phase them. But there is a repercussion for that, but you're removing it because your creatures don't matter to you. They have no names.
Yeah.
We don't need them.
Like, when it comes down to board wipes especially, I find the mentality that most players have mm-hmm. is that they don't like casting it because they're afraid of losing their own things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mentality that players need to get past.
Yeah.
I got past that very, very quickly because...
Same.
Yeah, it's just like, if I lose it, I lose it. Not a big deal. You know, it just comes down
rebuild,
to...
bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah. More intelligent and things... we won't go down there again. another strength from this deck is there are a lot of ways to win.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot. Excuse me. Ooh. Obviously, there's commander damage with Krav.
Mm-hmm.
Ragna, I don't care.
Well, his ability, real quick, just to touch on that, his ability to sack at any point
mm-hmm.
is pretty scary because... he's not just a 3-3 swinging at you. He can hit you pretty hard.
Yeah, and that's
he
the
can get
problem.
Out of control very quickly. And for one black mana, come on.
Well, and especially if you have your Regna, you're gaining life on every turn because you have a Soul Ring and it's a creature deck. You're potentially gaining 4 life around every turn, minimum if everyone plays one, but that's still 8 creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
8 creatures to sack is a lot of 1-1 counters on a commander.
That all of a sudden that 3 commander damage becomes 11, just like that.
So 2 swings.
11 and 11 life and 11 cards, which is a much, much
it's
different
huge.
Math.
Yeah, it changes the math dramatically. It's like when we were talking about Corvo. You know, we're like, he is going to be scary. He is a competitive commander because the moment you sacrifice things, you get a card draw, he gets a 1-1 counter, and...
you're getting advantage in a lot of ways from it, and
mm-hmm.
you're triggering, like you said, any of your sacrifice. With a Butcher out, with a Dictate, a Grave Pact, any of those things, not only is it giving you all of the aforementioned advantages of his drop, but you're also... sacking their board, you're also triggering your Blood Artist.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, I didn't even calculate the Dictate of Erebos as a board wipe either. I mean, like, I actually have, like, 6 board wipes. I have, like, Fumigate, Wrath of God, Day of Judgment, Dust Dawn. Like, I actually have 6 board wipes, not including things like Dictate.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. And like, what makes Kraft crazier than Korvald is just that the fact that he is a sack outlet. Korvald only sacks when he comes into play or when he attacks. That's it. If you need an instant speed sack outlet, Korvald doesn't do it. You need a different card.
Yeah, you can't sack things to
him
specifically.
It's not on a tap.
Yeah.
It's so broken.
Oh, yeah. And it's
so
like,
strong.
I'm going to abuse the living crap out of it. You know, it's like one of the things I like to do with Krav is like if I have that him and Ragna out and I've gained life on my turn, I will leave at least 3 black mana up. So before the person's, my first opponent's instep, I'll sacrifice 1 creature, gain a life, and I'll create 2 more.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm just perpetually creating more while I'm gaining life and drawing cards and putting 1/1 counters. And that's one of the reasons why I said that this deck is very mana hungry is because they're setting up for things like that where you have to have 3, 4, 5 mana open.
Yeah.
And while still casting these high casting cost cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets really, really crazy, really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Another strength for this is that time is actually your ally.
Yeah.
Unlike other times when time is actually not your ally. Yeah. It's just one of those things where even if you have people drawing into answers or whatever, you don't care because once again, you're controlling the board.
Yeah.
So it literally makes no difference. The more time people give you, the more you can set up things, the more you can make a board state, the more you can drain them. So time is against everyone else, and time is your friend in this case.
Absolutely.
Another strength here is token creatures act like resources, or I like to think of it as currency.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
They're like treasure tokens or something.
Yeah. So, and especially with like Pythia's Plunder, they are treasure tokens.
They die, they turn into mana. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, like I took out Pythia's Plunderer just because it was so broken for that. It's like, because then I just need 1 black mana, and then I'll sack out 1 token, and he'll be a treasure token, and I can use that treasure token to sack for a black mana to get, you know, on and on and on. So I took that out, but in this deck tech, I put it back in just to show everyone that that is one possibility. Like I said, everything kind of links with another thing, all right? So token creatures here really do act like resources. So they either generate mana for you, they draw cards for you, or they attack and drain people for you, or they help you gain life.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a token.
Yeah.
That's like
something that should be a throwaway.
Yeah, something that everyone's like, okay, I'm either using it to attack or I'm using it to like gain mana. No. That's like, here, hold my beer. Okay. Mine does 4, 5, 6 different things. Yours does only like 2. Like,
if that.
So let's talk about this. Like, why are you playing tokens when you can do all these different things? And that's the concept I had behind this. It's like, I have tokens. What are the best way to utilize tokens? All right. And then the next thing, because of the token, because of card draw, because of everything else, and you're controlling the field and everything, the last strength is you rebuild the board so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It is outrageous.
The ability to bounce back is important in any deck.
Yeah.
Some decks can get blown right off the board if they don't have... If there's a board wipe, it can be the end of the game for them and stuff.
Well, going back to the fact about my dragon deck, if it gets taken down, it gets taken down. That's just it.
Yeah.
I see that a lot with elves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because people, they don't sandbag. They just throw in every single elf they have in their hand.
They put every elf down, and as soon as one board wipe's gone, they're stuck holding a forest and maybe an overrun, but they don't do anything.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things, just like, okay, you know, like, you get board wiped. You're the one that's probably going to be doing the board wipe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, boom, like, you rebuild, and everyone's just lagging behind because you have so much mana wrap, you have so much card draw, you're just casting so many different things. It makes no difference, and it's very, very difficult for people to catch up
to. And that's when you swoop in with that commander damage.
Yeah.
Just
commanders
everyone.
Or tokens or you name it, whatever, it doesn't matter. You just start swinging away at everyone. It makes no difference.
Yep.
It's really, really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the strengths, but
it's not a perfect
deck. It's not a perfect deck. Every deck has a weakness. And this one, the weaknesses are pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you either, like, risk it all and go big or go home. That's my thinking of it. So, the biggest weakness here is that it uses up a lot of mana.
Mm.
Now, this deck, there are very little mana sinks in the deck. Okay, so because of that, if you have mana that's open by the end of your turn, there's a good chance you're not going to be using all that mana. So it's just one of those things. You just don't.
Yep.
But the deck does require a lot of mana because you're ramping up so quickly is because you're drawing so many cards. You want to cast 3-4 spells a turn. Like, I think I've cast 6 spells in one turn once.
Yeah.
Just because I had so much mana ramp. But, you know, that's besides the point. Your commanders get killed a lot. This is another reason why you need a lot of ramp.
Yeah, because people see it. They immediately see how they can get out of control real quick.
Yeah.
And because they're already relatively high-cost commanders, getting rid of them is very beneficial because it slows you down so much.
Yeah. Like,
it's all of a sudden that 5-cost commander is 7, and that is very difficult to play.
And that's the problem. Like, in a typical game with this deck, I would recast Ragna at least twice and Crab at least 5 times.
Oh.
Okay. And that is on average.
Wow.
Once it gets past that, I don't cast Crab anymore. It's just pointless.
Yeah, it's just done.
It's just, it costs way too much.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have the mana out. I'll have so much mana.
But
it makes no difference.
It becomes not worth it. Like,
yeah. So, and then I try to come up with a different strategy to try to win without Crab.
Okay. And that's why you have to have so many other win cons, is because
yeah.
you can't rely on that one commander. It's too risky.
It's very, very risky. And especially considering that, you know, the deck itself is the one that's running a lot of board wipes.
Yeah.
So, like this one runs a bunch, and then you're assuming everyone else is running at least 2 to 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your commanders will get killed off a lot. And this is one of the reasons why, like I said, I don't bother with things like Lightning Greaves or Swiftfoot Boots or things like that. I do have a Whisper Silk Cloak just to make it unblockable.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it
That's
more difficult.
That's a great
difficult.
Idea.
Yeah, but other than that, the other two just are useless for me.
Yeah.
Because they don't protect from a board wipe.
Yeah.
So, and then another thing is that it starts off so slow because they're trying to ramp so hard. You will be attacked like crazy for at least the first 3 or 4 turns.
You just become a very easy target for that early game.
Yeah. You have no defense.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
blocking with a Soul Warden. So.
No, it's not worth it. You like even if someone's attacking you for something like 10 damage, and you can block with a Soul Warden. You will still take it. You will not block with it because once you get that combination going, you can gain back 9 life in one turn rotation. You just do not care.
Well, and the other thing too is once your playgroup sees this deck and they see you pull it out, they're gonna hit you harder because they know that you can build up that on a undefeatable life.
Oh yeah,
so quickly.
Yeah, a lot of people when they see me pull out this deck, they already know what's coming and they're already prepared for it, and they let me do this from time to, play from time to time just because they know I tend to play the jankier decks, and sometimes I want to play the more powerful things, right?
You
want to
have your fun.
Yeah, I want to have my fun too, so like they let me do it and all that stuff. So another thing for the weaknesses here is that it does require a lot of board setup.
Mm-hmm.
So one card, like I said, can almost combo but synergize with another 3 or 4 other cards in the deck.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. But just that one card alone doesn't do enough.
Yeah.
It has
one card does not a board state make.
No, it does not. It has to combine with other cards. So building the board state is really, really, really difficult if people are targeting you often. So this is one of the reasons why I have so much life gain, is so that I don't have to block with the creatures. I can just keep on taking it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to make it so that...
you're almost just stalling for time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, the time is a strength for you, not a weakness.
Exactly.
So, and another thing here is once the board is set up, like we mentioned before, you are the arch enemy.
Which sometimes I think can be a lot of fun. I don't mind being the inadvertent archenemy. Wish I had the cards, but...
Yeah. Like I said, like, if you want to be a better player, you got to throw yourself into these situations.
Into the wolves.
Yeah. Because the more you're into or in those situations, the more you're used to it, the more you find ways out, the more, you know, on and on and on. It's like, if I wanted to be a better draft player, mm-hmm. what do I do? Just watch videos online of people drafting? No.
Play draft.
I'm going to play draft a lot. I'll maybe get a few friends together and try to build a cube or something and just draft like crazy. That's the best way to get better. It's just by doing it again and again and again. I'm going to have those times where I am the arch enemy.
Yeah.
Why don't I practice that more and more and more? Yeah.
And take that as an opportunity to, like you said, become a stronger player.
Yeah. So, like, let everyone throw everything at you.
Yeah.
You want to win.
And
yeah.
Throw it back.
Yeah, throw it back. just keep on forcing them to take you down, and then you learn what is important in the deck and what is not important in the deck.
And
what
how you can
sacrifice.
Fine-tune it, yeah.
Yeah, like...
What you're missing also becomes very clear at that point.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, oh, I really wish I had more removal. I really wish I had this. I really wish I had that. And you start adjusting it. Excuse me. Ah. Oh, that was gross. I think I swallowed a fly. Excuse me, everyone. Technical difficulties here. Hang on.
Personal difficulties.
Ew. But anyways, getting past that, the more you do something, the better you get. You know, it's like if you want to be a faster player, you don't bring out your deck and play it once a month. No, you play it again and again and again. So you know each card, you know what to expect, you know how to improve it, you know how the flow of it is. And that is one of the best ways to become a faster player.
And you know what's going to be a good hand.
Yeah, you know what to keep, what not to keep, what to look for, what to expect. How often you get a certain card or a combo off, on and on and on. This is the same thing, but just arch enemy, 3v1. That's it. So, and I learned the hard way, I need a lot more board wipes, hence 6. So, and yeah, like there's a lot of other reasons why, but you know, that's one of the things. This weakness hurts me so bad. I hate it when people do this to me. But selective card discard hurts this deck a lot. So if an opponent gets rid of key cards in your hand, like they use like anything there where they look at your hand and they're like, I want this card gone.
Yeah.
It hurts because sometimes you can't get to that graveyard recursion. Sometimes you do need that life gain card to throw down.
Yeah.
And also it gives valuable information to that opponent
about your strategy.
Yeah, and when it's arch enemy, they're gonna share it.
Oh yeah.
So
it's revealed to the table.
Yeah. Like, and people were like telling me before, they're like, oh, like, why do you hate card draws or card discard so much? You know, you draw so much. But I was digging.
Much because you need these cards.
Yeah, I was digging for that one card to get rid of it.
I don't need the soul ring, man.
Yeah, I don't need a soul ring. I don't need an arcane signet. I needed that soul's attendant. I needed that other card, you know. So it's just one of those things. And the last weakness here, which everyone falls into, but this deck especially, is that it's very easy to miss triggers.
There's a lot going on with it, yeah.
Yeah. So let's picture this, for example. If one token dies, how many things will trigger? And I will tell you the following things, okay? Krav could trigger, because you're probably sacrificing it to Krav.
Oh, yeah.
Ragna could trigger because of the Blood Artist or Zulaport Cutthroat or something like that, which will drain someone and you'll have you gain life. You have other things that either are creating life or losing life or drawing cards or something like that. Like they're
or causing creature sacrifice for other players.
Yeah, because of the Dictate or Butcher.
All I'm saying is if you don't remind me, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. So because of that, I will rearrange my board in a very weird state where I go from left to right. I'll put the things that I normally want triggered first, and I will go down the line. It's like a assembly line.
Yeah.
Well, even if you're on your phone or you're paying attention to another conversation, it's very easy to miss your Soul Warden triggers. And that can be the difference between your gaining life Regna trigger and not. So you do have to pay attention. It is a lot to keep track of. Mm-hmm. And there's interactions on opponent's turns, your turn, upkeep. There's tons everywhere.
It requires a lot more focus.
Yeah. Especially when you have Regna out, because Regna only triggers to create the tokens if you've gained life before the end step starts. Because you do the check at that point in time where to see if you have gained life at the beginning of the end step. If at the beginning of the end step you did not gain life, and you gain life during that time period, too bad. There is no going back. There is no getting the warrior token. So you have to be like, okay, before your end step, I want to do this so I can gain some life. Does anyone have any action to that?
Yeah, do you have any response to this?
Yeah, do you have a response? Yes, do it now. But that is the one trigger that is really, really difficult to remember, because we're used to during the end step. No, this one has to be before the end step, because it's right at the beginning of the end step it triggers. So, and it gets out of hand, because then, you know, it's like, okay, before your end step goes, you do this stuff. And then there it goes back, everyone passes, blah, blah, blah. And then it's during the end step, okay, now during your end step, I'm going to do this. So it's just like, okay, like, are you done? Are you done? Are you done? Yeah, okay, now take your bloody turn, because that's what it feels like sometimes. You're just doing everything on everyone else's turn. So, but those are the weaknesses of this deck. So let's get into the nuances of how to play this deck.
Yeah, what you want to actually be doing during it.
Yeah. So number one thing, as mentioned before, since it's a very mana hungry deck, we want to mana ramp the living crap out of the whole thing as much as we can. It's only when you fully like establish a board state where it's turn like 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that. If you have a mana ramp card, you might keep it in your hand, because someone might just board wipe all the mana ramp, like all the artifacts or something like that, okay? But other than that, you're ramping very, very hard. And we'll go over more in detail of why, okay? But when you're ramping, this, like, since we're drawing many of the cards, we want to cast multiple spells. So this is the number one priority, okay? Second thing for playing this is we're not casting creatures according to your casting cost, but, or like we are, but once craft comes out, it's the whole thing changes. And like Dan and Hope, we talked about this earlier, just me explaining it, but I'm going to explain this to everyone on the podcast here. I call this the mana shift theory. Okay. People naturally do this in their head without thinking about it, but I took this, in my opinion, to a whole new level. And the way it is that for this deck, I actually have two different mana curves. One where I have the card, and whatever the CMC is, I will cast it for that CMC. When I get it, I'll cast it, done and done. I don't care. The second mana curve will shift according to what turn it is, what's out in play, on and on and on. So the example that we were talking about earlier is, if you have a counter spell that's 2 CMC, 2 casting costs, okay? People will have it on their mana curve as a 2 drop. I'm saying no. It's actually a 5 or a 6 drop. And that is because you're not going to the chances of you casting it on turn 2 is very, very low. You might do it, but other than that, you're probably going to save it for a bigger spell where it's like someone's dropping something that's a 4 cost or a 5 casts, you know, and that's when you're going to counter the spell. On top of that, you're probably going to cast something else on turn 2 and not to counter spell, something that you're like a mana ramp card or something like that. So in actuality, that counter spell is like a CMC of 6. And as the turns go on, the mana curve for that one spell will lower. So turn 3, it will go down to a 5. Turn 4, it will go down to a 4. Turn 5, it'll be a turn 3. Turn 6, now it's a turn 2, because you can cast your 4 drop spells and still have 2 mana up for that counter spell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the theory behind it. Now, a lot of people already do this for one or two cards without even thinking. Mm-hmm. Okay, I do this with a bunch of stuff, and that is the creatures. And I will bump up the creatures by at least one mana cost once Crab drops onto the battlefield. And reason why is because if I have a few creatures out and Crab comes out and I cast it on turn 5, okay, with no mana ramp, I'm totally tapped out. Someone board wipes. I lost all my stuff. They have won the battle of attrition there. I am losing.
Well, you're down your sack outlet. You don't have the ability to respond, so you don't have your built-in advantage.
Yeah. And you can't replay him next turn.
Yeah. So, and this is one of the reasons why one of the weaknesses is that this is slow. And this is also another reason why I have this mana shift theory going on with the mana curve of two different mana curves. Soul Ring, I don't care. It's a one cost no matter what. Okay. Mm-hmm. Soul Warden, sure, it's a one drop. I can cast it on turn one, turn two, turn three, blah, blah, blah. But if Crab is out, okay, and I have one mana left untapped, I am not going to cast the Soul Warden.
No.
I don't care. If I have a Darksteel Ingot untapped and cast for any color, okay, and I can cast that Soul Warden, I am going to hold back and I will not do it because I need it for a black mana to sacrifice things. And this is where the shift comes into play, all right? And like I know we're going to cover this in later on in when we talk about mana curves and everything, but this is a very, very, very important thing that a lot of players will not do. Like, we're used to just one mana curve. We're used to just seeing how it is regularly. My thinking is total opposite. Mm-hmm. You have two different mana curves in every single deck. One where you'll cast it for whatever its cost. The second one will change depending on whatever the board state is. This is especially true for X mana cost spells.
Yeah, it's more of a variable CMC.
Yeah, so it's just trying to work that out. So like when you look at the deck list, you'll see I have a lot of 2, 3, and 4 drops. But in actuality, because I'm shifting things over, I actually have a lot of 4, 5, and 6 drops. And that is the reason why I have like 11 mana ramp cards in here. Mm-hmm. I want to guarantee that I'm ramping so hard that I can play those 4, 5, and 6 drops very, very easily. As opposed to waiting until turn 8 and then like, yes, I finally have the mana to cast the spell.
Yeah.
So that's one of the ways to play for one of the things to consider when playing this deck. And this is also one of the reasons why when I give this deck to people, they have a tough time because they don't know that.
They don't consider that.
They don't consider it. Or if I do tell them that, they forget because they're not used to the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, or if they do leave mana up, it's like, oh, I left the white one up instead of a black. Oops.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a huge thing with this deck. So another way to play this deck, okay, also, is to always cast Crab first, okay? Regna does not matter, really. Regna is kind of like a spectator half the time in this deck, okay? You don't cast Regna until, like, turn 7 or 8 more normally.
She's a good bonus, but she's not the main...
Yeah.
Attraction.
She's not the main attraction. She helps a lot, especially when you have that board state.
Yeah, she definitely serves what you're trying to do, but Crab is the... He's the
king.
Yeah.
He's the key to the deck, okay? Because, mm-hmm. like, once again, you're trying to win the Battle of Attrition. If people are board wiping, especially yourself, you need those sack outlets, and Crab is the sack outlet. You want to gain the advantage of life, card draw.
Mm-hmm.
Counters are kind of a bonus, but you want the card draw and you want the life. And because that's going to help you rebuild very, very quickly. Regna,
when you have to, not if you have to.
Yeah, when you do. Regna, like I said, is just there as a side bonus. So, like, if you have Crab out and you have a bunch of extra mana, sure, cast Regna. Then you can have both of them go off of each other and just go nuts. Right? So, another thing to remember with this deck is, and I've mentioned it many, many times, this is a battle of attrition. As creatures die, you have cards that drain opponents. As you gain life, you have cards that allow you to benefit from it. If your opponent tries to take out your board state, you can sacrifice most of it to rebuild quickly. And when you're sacrificing or having them destroy your stuff, you're draining them. Like, it doesn't matter. You're punishing them for every single move they do against you. Mm-hmm. You, if they do something to someone else, fine. You don't
let
care.
Let them.
Right?
But if they try to hurt you, you're going to hurt them just as much or twofold.
Yeah. And that's why it's a battle of attrition. You want to punish them so that if they do anything, like, it's that fear factor.
Yeah.
Okay?
You want to be a constant threat whether or not it's overt.
Yeah. And this comes down to us, like, how well the playgroup knows how to politic. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because if you're in a playgroup and they don't politic well, it's no longer arch enemy for you. It's nowhere close because they're going to be targeting someone else. They're going to be making deals on the
side. And you can just pick them all off one by one.
Yeah. But if the group knows how to politic
and they start to work together and really become a force to be reckoned with, that changes the game majorly.
Yeah. And when that changes, this concept comes into play dramatically because you have to find ways to waste 3 people's resources all at the same time, while minimizing yours as much as you can. So they're
Which
winning
is
the
damn
battle.
Near impossible. It's very difficult,
but with this deck, ironically, it totally is possible. Mm-hmm. It's because, and once again, it's because of board wipe. And like, oh, Vedalken Orrery, I love you. That's all I have to say. Because the moment you get a Vedalken Orrery out, it's fun times. So, but it's really, really, really hard for that. And then another way to play is once again, whenever your opponents are weak against, you put your resources into it. Mm-hmm. So if they can't deal with a big flyer, a big creature like Krav, abuse it.
Yeah. If they just smack them constantly with that creature.
If they can't deal with, all the creatures that you have, cause they don't have board wipes in their hand.
Or blockers,
create a bunch of 1/1s, create a bunch of tokens, just go crazy.
Just chip away.
Yeah. If they have a lot of removal, just focus on getting those cards that will drain your opponent.
Yeah.
So all of these are your win cons, but at the same time, you're forcing them to regret targeting you.
Yeah.
So, and it's just one of those things. You're forcing their hand.
Yeah.
You're forcing them to use up your resources. You're regaining your resources because you go through your resources really fast. So you have a lot of card draw to regain all those resources. You're outmatching them. Okay. And this also leads into another thing that I want to talk about for it is quadrant theory. Okay. This is talked a lot about in things like Command Zone and other podcasts and everything. It's concept by Brian Wong, where he suggests that the game is in one of the 4 quadrants, either opening or developing, when the game's in parity, whether you're winning or whether you're losing, okay? Now, the first 3-4 turns, you are going to be developing the board normally,
mm-hmm.
all right? And that's because it's a slow deck, you want to ramp like crazy, you need to go crazy. Like, on turn 5, you will not be casting your commander still. Most likely, you're casting on turn 6. So you're going to be taking a lot of bumps and bruises here. Okay? But the moment, your commander comes out, it's a different game. During the opening and developing part, you're going to be using a lot of politics for threat assessment to help yourself not be the target or attacked that often. So it's like, okay, I don't have a board stick, guys. I've just been ramping because I have nothing else. Right?
This is all I can do. All I can do is play land, guys.
Yeah. Why are you attacking me with a 5/5 when someone else has something that's going to... that like they attack
They're
you.
A threat to you.
Yeah, they're the threat. I'm doing nothing here, right? You got to find ways to politic.
Yeah.
Okay? When you're at parity, you're the one that creates the parity. Let's just put that out right now. Unless the person has, like, Avacyn out, you are the one that creates the parity. You decide when parity happens because you have so much removal and board wipes. You will create it. All right? So parity is not a big deal. Losing, yes, it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There will be times when you are running behind, especially at the beginning. Okay? If you're losing, focus on the life gain. Because people, we're hardwired to, in Commander, to be like, life gain isn't a big deal. No one cares about life gain. And this deck abuses that.
Well, it's so easy to kill people with commander damage that, yeah, 200 life doesn't matter all the time.
Yeah, along with, like, infects, you know, all that stuff. Like, they're, or, like, people going off and comboing to the point where they either mill you out or just do a million damage. Mm-hmm. People are like, life doesn't matter, okay? So, abuse that. I mean, they're like, I'm gaining life, guys, but I have nothing else going on, okay? So, stuff like that. But if you're losing, focus on gaining life, because the life gain will buffer it, will buy you some time.
Like, okay. And like we said, in the long run, it will be a resource to you. So you're just, you're again, that's part of your development, and even in your lost state.
Yeah. And this also works with you for the board wipes in the deck, okay? Because as you're gaining life, people are attacking each other, they're chipping away at each other and everything, and then you wipe the board. You can set up again really, really quickly, and everyone else has already wasted a lot of resources for their own things, that it's hard for them to catch up because they're already in the lead from the life alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the last one, for winning, when you're winning, it is arch enemy.
Mm-hmm.
There is no ands, if, or buts about this.
Because you get very scary.
You get very, very scary. Like the best way for them to win is to either team up or someone just combos out and just wins the game from there. So when you're winning, it's very, very difficult. It does happen often when you are in that winning zone.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, 3v1, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
Which is why in that winning state, it's so important to make sure that you have answers at the ready for any opportunity. So that when you are the arch enemy, you have something to fall back on.
Yeah. I love being arch enemy.
Me too.
Like, it's just so much fun. You're put in a tight spot. You're thinking outside a box.
I don't know. For me, it's probably just my affinity for Nicol Bolas.
Daniel's probably like, I'm going to sneak behind and kill you all from behind. Yeah.
Daniel just likes to sit and chill.
I'm the arch enemy in most games.
So. Yeah.
Really?
All the time, yeah.
Oh, that's true, actually. Come to think about it, when I do play against you, yeah.
Often people
will... It's usually the table trying to figure out how to deal with what I have.
Yeah, what he's going to do this time. Because he always brings out a new deck.
Well, especially with Muldrotha.
Muldrotha, so Slivers.
It's a good way to say annoying. It does draw the table's ire.
Sometimes
not so much, now that you took out some of the things that I found to be very...
Not fun?
Yeah, Ginger Taxes.
Not that bad.
In a Muldrotha deck?
Not that bad. No, like, but his Muldrotha deck is fantastic. Like, it is arch enemy whenever you do play it, though, I'll admit.
But you do have to be ready to play whenever you're playing a deck like that.
Yeah.
When you're ahead, this is going to really accelerate you ahead.
Yeah.
If you're ahead, you're not going to be 10 life up on someone. You're going to have drawn a ton of extra cards. You're going to be in the hundreds of life category. You are going to be what the kids call problematic.
This compared to your Muldrotha, now that you bring it up, we got to do the next deck tech on that because it's so crazy.
That is a deck that I think we need to talk about.
Yeah. Like, oh my goodness. Like, when you first showed it to me and you're playing it, and I was playing my book tribe while I was sitting next to you, and you actually helped me out a few times. But it's just like, I'm just sitting there and just like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Who does this guy think he is?
Heck, I think it was the first time we actually met.
I think that was, yeah.
So.
And he still wanted to be his friend?
Well, like, you know, it's a cool deck, you know, and he liked my deck because it's like Book Tribal. What the heck, you know?
Book
and
Tribal is a cool deck.
It is a really cool concept.
And then, like, I pissed off one of my friends because, like, he tried doing the Solemnity Phyrexian Unlife combo, but he tapped out, and when he would cast a Solemnity, I had a Disruptive Student, where you just tap and counter, and four spike. Yeah. And he's just like, why? I'm like, why the heck would I let you do that?
Why would I allow this?
Yeah. Right. I'm not crazy, okay?
I'm not stupid.
No, it's still, like, one of my favorite things, especially with my book, Tribal, it's like, what's Codex Shredder? Because people forget about it, and they're like, I will tutor. I will put that on the top. Cool. I will mill it. Or they're like, I will scry. I will leave that on top. Good. I will mill it.
You want it? I got it.
So it's just, people hate me so much for that. It's just like, okay, fine. But that is the deck tech that we have for Ragnar and Krav.
Let us know, by the way, if there's any life gain cards you like that you would like to put in.
If there's any partner commanders that you play or want to hear us do deck techs on, because we may very well have decks that use them.
I think it'd be interesting if someone recommends a commander for us, and once again, we
build one with it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, but each of us were like, "No, I would put this in." Well, why would you put that? That makes no sense.
So let us know what you think, either on the Facebook or on the Instagram. It's Into the 99 on both.
And we'll be putting up the deck list soon.
Yeah. As well, feel free to join our Discord.
Oh yeah, we have a Discord now. Yay! I'm still getting used to Discord.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a good app to interact, though. So you can come there, ask us any questions.
We hop decks on quite regularly, so.
At least we try to as much as we can.
Some of us more than others.
Daniel's the man for that. He's king of, you know, answering back, so.
Oh, yeah.
He is the man. But let us know. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys later.
Bye.